final case of the day is United States against Navarette. Ms. Garst.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good afternoon, I guess. May it please the Court, my name is Hannah Garst. I represent Defendant Appellate Armando Navarette in this case. The District Court plainly erred when it ordered restitution based on Mr. Navarette's gain from the scheme rather than LaSalle Bank's loss. The District Court in this case never made a finding that LaSalle Bank actually lost $16 million. This court has said,
correct? You're not questioning the prison. You're not challenging the prison sentence, just the restitution order. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, he has his pro se brief.
In his pro se brief, he's challenging much more than just restitution. He is challenging just about everything. However, in the brief that I submitted, I'm only challenging restitution.
Because the prison sentence can be related to the gain, right? It doesn't have to be the loss.
Correct.
It's just the restitution that you argue has to be based on the loss to the victim.
Correct. And the District Court, when it figured...
Did anybody else come forward and say he was a victim? That is, competitors, presumably... The real victims here, not LaSalle, it's probably firms that would have supplied the services that Navarette did, right?
Correct. So it would be some of the different companies who were denied the...
Like Ingersoll. So
right.
Have they come forward and said, we're victims, or have they brought civil suits or anything, as far as you know?
Not that I know of. Not in this case.
So I had a question about a different aspect, since presumably you would think the restitution order should be monies paid back to LaSalle, but there's language in the forfeiture that money that's being forfeited to the United States is going to be applied to restitution.
There was a question about that, which I raised in the brief, and I believe what actually happened after talking to the government is that they're saying that the money that they collect through forfeiture will be, in essence, turned over to LaSalle Bank. And I believe what will happen is that money will be credited towards the restitution amount when it's paid over, because LaSalle Bank can't recover twice. They can't recover for restitution.
Well, that's my concern, of course.
And forfeiture. So that was...
What significance does the restitution order have? The district judge's forfeiture judgment says... Everything that Navarette owns, including his dog, if any, is forfeited to the United States. Who cares about restitution at that point?
Well, Your Honor, I think the restitution is important here because Mr. Navarette at this point is about to be 50. He'll be 54 when he gets out. He is a driven man. I mean, the district court noted that he was a very hard worker. He could intend to build up another company and this time do it honestly.
But I thought actually one of the points, I forget if it was in your brief or his, was that if you were really trying to focus in on LaSalle Bank's loss, that the number might be quite a bit lower than the number of his gain, because actually his company was quite good at what it did and they received quite a bit of value from him, and by the time you finished offsetting all of that, maybe you'd be at a far lower number.
Exactly. And the district court noted that LaSalle Bank lost millions, but we have no idea what millions could possibly mean. The record is clear
that... going to pay some money for these security services, presumably.
Right, and the way that the government proceeded with this case was as an overbilling. They were trying to compare what they believed to be comparable invoices. Now, the district court disagreed that INS and Ingersoll Rand were comparable, basically said that you're not comparing apples to apples here. But if you're looking at services, I mean, there is value that LaSalle Bank received from these services, and there was testimony throughout the trial that LaSalle Bank, that INS did an amazing job of providing services and was this one-stop shop that LaSalle Bank could basically call it at any turn, any day of the week, and INS was there. They were providing these services.
But how does this whole scheme make sense if it isn't, in a sense, overbilling? Mr. Konyuk, or however you pronounce his name, wants what sounded to me like kickbacks. So he wants Navarette to supply inflated invoices to LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank pays the inflated invoices. He slips the money back. I mean, how? Where else is he getting these enormous sums of money that he's paying to Mr. Konjuk?
I would guess that the money that he's getting is just from proceeds that he's making through the company. And you're referring to Mr. Navarette?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Navarette's paying Konjuk, right?
Right.
And Konjuk is saying, my daughter needs to go to college, and he's giving $10,000 at her wedding and doing all sorts of stuff. But I understood the government's at least initial theory to be that, in a sense, it was LaSalle Bank that was financing all of these payments. Maybe not. Maybe it was INS as a whole. And maybe they were paying the money just to secure the business and to deprive ADT of business. I don't know.
Mr. Navarette contended at both at trial and at sentencing that he was not overbilling, that he was actually giving the service that they were paying for. He pointed to the fact that there were other groups of LaSalle Bank that was paying the exact same amount that the security services were paying that was not related to Konjuk. So he was pointing to the fact that LaSalle Bank was getting a lot for their money. Now, I guess the question is, would a company who had gone through the vetting process, would they be paying the same amount that INS was paid given if Konjuk wasn't involved? And that's what the government was trying to prove and really did not prove at trial and sentencing. The district court found that based on Riordan and Dudney's testimony that it could not compute loss.
So let me ask you this question about the restitution. If we were to agree with you that this was based on the wrong thing, there's some question about whether there would just be a complete new hearing where the district court took new evidence and really tried to find the proper facts, or whether the district court would be stuck with the record that he's already announced on the record is insufficient to come up with some rational finding on loss.
We would contend that any remand should limit the scope for a couple of reasons.
So no new evidence is okay, though?
No, we would say new evidence is not okay.
Your argument should be there's no basis for the restitution order. They didn't prove a loss, so that's it.
So
exactly.
No,
I mean, they had 8 days of trial.
They had a bite at that, right?
And that's essentially what it would be, two bites at the same apple, that they had 8 days at trial, 4 days at sentencing. They paid, it's in the record, over $160,000 for Dudney and Riordan's analysis and testimony, and it amounted to nothing. The district court found that it wasn't persuasive. So therefore, on remand, they should be limited to what was in the record before the district court. And the parties, if could submit written submissions based on what's before the court, as they did, I believe it's United States versus George. The parties were allowed to submit written submissions to figure out.
Has the government preserved that? Do they argue that Judge Connelly was wrong to think that you couldn't estimate loss from the existing record?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think that the government really points to the fact that they put this $29.8 million loss on the table, so Mr. Navarette's really getting a good benefit here. And of course, we disagree with that because we would say that they didn't prove loss. I don't believe that, and I'm sure the government can speak for themselves on this, but I really think that if you look at the actual record here, I mean, they gave the district court multiple pieces of evidence here, and the district court just bottom line did not agree that they could use that evidence to find loss. That's why they went to gain, and that's why when determining Mr. Navarette's sentence, they relied on gain itself under the 2B1.1. If they could have found loss, then the district court should have used loss as the calculation for the 2B1.1. They should not have used gain. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. The district court did find that LaSalle lost many millions of dollars and found.
I don't believe it, and I don't think there's any evidence of that. And I don't think they're the victim. Look, all this fellow, and I don't believe actually he was coerced by contract or anything of that sort. This is a deal with Cone Judge in which what Navarette gets is he gets the whole business of LaSalle, which is great. It's profitable. He's actually a good businessman, although crooked. So that's what he gets. And the people who are hurt are competing suppliers who would have had LaSalle's business if John Conjuk didn't steer everything to Navarette, right? So I don't think you have victims here. I don't think the victims are here, but if LaSalle did overpay, you know, maybe it overpaid, well, where's the overpayment? I don't see the amount of the overpayment having been computed. And a complicating factor, of course, is, at least according to the brief, Navarette gave really good service, right? Well, if you give really good service, you'll be paid extra, but that doesn't mean there's an overpayment, right? So I don't see your...
What we do know is that LaSalle, when they discovered the scheme, they fire Navarette, and they are satisfied with the service that they do get from Ingersoll Rand, which is much cheaper to LaSalle.
Fire Navarette, but I don't see how, when they find out that he's conspiring with their employee, but I don't understand how from that you get a number.
We get a number by seeing that LaSalle, once they take their corrupt officer out of the mix, the officer who was controlling LaSalle's FISC during the time period of the scheme, once he's out of it, LaSalle then can make the judgment on its behalf how much do they really want to pay for these services. And they contract with Ingersoll Rand.
So are you making an argument that, you know, even though LaSalle is getting gourmet services from INS, they'd actually prefer to have McDonald's service from Ingersoll Rand?
What we do know is that they do prefer Ingersoll Rand because they got it and they were satisfied with it and it was much cheaper to them. And they did not have the opportunity.
So the loss is what? Putting aside the question of a quality difference, so then the loss logically would be the difference between the price that Ingersoll Rand charges and the price that Navarette charges multiplied by, you know, the amount of business, right? So why is that so difficult to compute?
From our perspective, it was not difficult to compute. That is the computation that we offered the district court. We said, take a look at Ingersoll Rand.
So are you cross-appealing, saying that the judge should indeed have computed the loss, and there's enough evidence before him, and he threw up his hands inappropriately? I didn't think you were arguing that.
We did not cross appeal.
You can't show a loss. I don't get, or you can't quantify the loss.
What our position is that the loss, or that the amount of the judgment that the district court did impose, does not amount to plain error that this court should
reverse.
But
I don't understand you. There's no necessary connection between the malefactor's gain and the victim's loss, especially when you don't have the correct victims here, since the victims are the competitors. I mean, LaSalle may have been victimized also, may have paid a little too much. That's fine. But there's no, but you're not, that's not what you're seeking in restitution.
But the restitution that the judge did order, the $16 million figure, was tied to what LaSalle paid.
No, that's not a calculation of what LaSalle lost.
Understood. But in our position
understood.
Is...
Understood. It's not a calculation of the loss.
It is a subset of the loss. It captures money that LaSalle...
It may not be a subset. It may be a superset, actually. And the district judge himself goes to the application note that allows him to use gain when he can't find loss for the sentencing purposes, which, aside from Mr. Navarette, you know, isn't being pushed here. So he doesn't think he's doing what you say he's doing.
What he says is he doesn't buy that it's just the amount of bribe. He says that LaSalle paid significantly more than it wanted to pay or should have paid and would have paid a similarly situated competitor. He says that there was millions of dollars of loss, but he admittedly says, but I can't
wrong.
Reasonably
when
calculate
he said
it.
He couldn't count. Unless, well, no, I'm not necessarily wrong. You guys may be wrong. You may not have presented competent evidence. But if you did present competent evidence to calculate the loss, then you should have cross-appealed because it has to be a loss and not the defendant's gain.
Let me be sure I understand this. You're not cross-appealing because you don't want a higher sentence or you don't want a higher judgment, do you?
You're
just trying to defend your existing judgment on a theory different from the district court's.
That's correct, Your Honor. Given the standard of review and the most efficient use of our efforts, and we hope the court's efforts, would be to simply affirm.
No, I'm corrected. It's not a cross-appeal. But am I not correct that you're not challenging his determination that there isn't enough evidence to enable him to calculate loss?
Bottom line, Your Honor, yes, that
yes.
You are correct.
Well, that, I think, is your fatal error, because he has to compute the loss. He could compute the loss unless you didn't give him good evidence, and he didn't compute the loss. He computed the gain.
Nevertheless,
nothing. I don't see what error you have to... what space you have in which to make that argument.
And I will concede that the space we have is that this court should look at the number that Judge Cannelli found and should, with confidence...
How are we supposed to relate that number to the loss to LaSalle?
By seeing that the way he calculated that number...
As far as we know, actually, you don't have a figure for... The loss to LaSalle is the amount of overpayment multiplied by the quantity of service bought. And those figures apparently are not in the record.
The district judge...
$15 million, right?
We believe it's $29 million. That is the figure that we offered.
Why aren't you challenging his finding and saying, I don't get it?
We're not challenging the finding, Judge, because we don't think the judgment below is a plain error that warrants reversal.
It is a plain error because the connection between your $15 million or whatever it is and the loss to LaSalle is completely arbitrary. We have no idea what the loss to LaSalle was.
Judge, I disagree. I think the loss to LaSalle, where the judge is taking $16 million out of what LaSalle parted out of its pockets to the defendant, less the cost that the defendant accrued in providing those services, that is a loss to LaSalle. We think LaSalle lost more.
Why did Judge Cannelli say he couldn't compute the loss?
Judge Cannelli did not think that Ingersoll Rand provided the judge with a sufficient one-to-one comparison. There are also some...
And you accept that, and therefore you don't have the loss comparison.
Maybe the problem is you shouldn't be accepting that. If a corporate travel officer is bribed by an airline to book all corporate passengers in first class when the board of directors wants them all to go in coach, my assumption is that the loss is the difference between first class and coach fares without any offset for the fact that the people in first class got free drinks. Right? The gold-plated service was not what the firm wanted to buy, and so the entire difference would be loss. I'd understood that to be your theory of loss, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, that was our theory of loss. I think we were even more conservative in saying, take a look at what Ingersoll Rand provided, and you can see that Ingersoll Rand provided even the same level of service because of their matching responsibility codes. And even that shows that LaSalle is out tens of millions of dollars. So, again, that's why we think it's not worth going back to recalculate this figure when the defendant is receiving a substantial benefit in that loss calculation. So we would ask
to recapitulate, your basis for thinking that LaSalle actually lost $29 million is what?
Is that Ingersoll Rand was hired by LaSalle after Konyuk is out of the picture. So LaSalle is able to make their own free of bribery decision to hire Ingersoll Rand. Ingersoll Rand provides services that match Navarette based on the coding at
I thought there LaSalle. Was a, only a partial match.
It's a 67% match.
Yeah,
and
so two-thirds.
And using that comparison, the witnesses said That's how we'll only look at those that match.
And to go to Judge Easterbrook's point, I suppose, you know, it's also a signal that LaSalle actually didn't want the other third.
Just didn't want the other third of the services.
I think that that's clear, and I think that's also clear from during the time of the scheme when ADT was a competitor and Navarette comes into the picture and Navarette starts getting all of the business and ADT starts losing business from LaSalle. It shows that Konyuk is steering all of LaSalle's business to Navarette, not giving LaSalle the opportunity to choose cheaper service. We would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Mr. Shaw, anything further, Ms. Garst?
Your Honors, I just want to clear up a misunderstanding about Ingersoll Rand versus INS. As far as the responsibility codes, they were unmatched, and they just applied the same percentage. Now, INS provided many more services than Ingersoll Rand, but that doesn't mean that the bank didn't need the services. These were services for drive-up windows, pneumatic tubes, safes. It was things that LaSalle Bank would have had to hire out to another company.
Did LaSalle Bank buy them from somebody else once it hired Ingersoll, which didn't provide them?
Your Honor, it's not in the record.
It's not buy them.
It's not clear. I think one of the major differences that the district court also relied on is that from 2001 to 2006, when INS was involved, this was a period of a tremendous growth for the banks. They were adding 10 to 20 branches per year, versus when Ingersoll Rand was in 2006 to 2007. This was the time period when LaSalle Bank was getting ready to be sold. They were cutting costs. They were trying to make their books look tremendously good for the buyer. And the district court, and I believe it's page 30. Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, wait, I'd like to hear the rest of the answer.
On page 30 of their opinion, the district court, Judge Cannelli went to the defendant's sentencing memorandum, which pointed out these exact facts and said that the district court said it was relying on them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Garst, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and your assistance to the court as well as your client. The case